It's Bronson Modern Gods. It's a bonus episode. It's John.
And Richard.
There you go. Hey, thanks for joining us. You know, bonus episode time. We talk a little bit about your questions. Hopefully we have some answers. We share your comments. We're making a little community here. Let's do it together with the funny books and the NFTs. Oh, right.
I said the end.
You said that, not me. I did not say that word. We have to cut this out, don't we? We do have the comic NFT report coming up, like it or not. You can skip it if you don't like it. But let's head to our favorite segment, Richard. Viewer mail.
You've got mail.
And I have one from A Instinct. Edit. Somehow my last comment got lost. Oh, well, A Instinct, sorry. We didn't see it. We didn't delete it. Promise you. Don't know what happened there. Anyway, still loving you guys. Loving your guys' show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoying it on my ride to work 2 times each week. When we get 2 episodes up. Somehow, so I got a request / idea for the next viewer mail episode. Good timing. Since I only hopped on the Instagram train recently after eBay bank account changes, etc., I'm wondering how I can buy and sell slabs in Instagram. Can you do a quick how-to buy and sell the best? So far, I feel I can only shop if I follow channel selling, but I can't look up books I'm after. Well, we just so happen to have done an entire episode about selling and buying on Instagram, and I will link to it in the description for you, A Instinct. As far as finding specific books on Instagram, that is a tougher one. You can't really do a search, but once you get involved in the community and people kind of know what you're looking for and you let them know over and over what you're looking for, like say, for example, Yellow Claw number one, your DMs will be filled with people telling you, hey, there's a Yellow Claw number one over here. I still get DMs on the weekly telling me that there's a copy of Yellow Claw number one being sold here or there. Where were all these for those months I was searching for it, Richard?
Yeah, it's a great community. If you express interest in something, post. What I would do is make a post with a picture in it of what you're looking for and state that, you know, to contact you if you have one available. That might help. Instagram has no real search capability other than for hashtags. So unless the person put a hashtag with what you're looking for, it's going to be tough to find. So that's an unfortunate thing of this particular marketplace.
Yeah, but watch the video that I'm going to link in the description, and that should help get you started. Thank you for writing in. All right, Richard, you have a piece of viewer mail from a friend of the show.
Yes, Mark Oldroyd. Love and Rockets, an hugely undervalued title. It has no people in spandex, so there you go. I have to disagree with that.
You beat me to it.
The luchas are there. The wrestlers wearing their spandex and their masks are an integral part of the storyline for Love and Rockets, which is fun.
You're going with the luchadores?
Yeah.
20th century.
Yes.
Her entire thing is that she wants to be a superhero and she's walking around in spandex constantly, really tight spandex if you're into
that. Penny Century is such a great character. You know, it's one of the book excels at giving this deep backstory to characters, and Penny Century is no exception. She has this mystique about her because she is as close to a superhero as you'll get in the storyline. And it's not powers, it's just her character and personality.
You haven't caught up to the new series yet. She is a superhero.
I would not doubt it. No, I have not read the third series yet. So
more of a super villainess, actually. Yeah, I'll let you catch up. No spoilers. And she broke Rand Race's heart, so she's always been a supervillain.
But I agree, this title has been so undervalued. You know, it's to me, it's up there with Cerebus and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and things like Flaming Carrot. And, you know, there's a whole underground kind of comic scene that happened in the early 80s that really set the tone for a lot of creators who are writing books today. So you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't explore those old books.
And I'm really glad Grendel is finally breaking out of that indies and is being worth something just because there's a Netflix show. Come on, everybody. It's a great book.
Yes, it's a great book. There's so many titles that are in that era, but Love and Rockets to me is always one of those books that deserves to be front and center.
All right. My next piece of viewer mail is from Wesley Bassler. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right, Wesley. Apologies if I got that wrong. Another great video, guys. Thank you. Hey, I was wondering if y'all could do a video on Whitman variants and what it all means. There are very conflicting schools of thoughts with these types of comics. Well, first of all, don't call them Whitman variants. No, you can call them Whitman variants. Don't call them Whitman reprints. That's what we got roasted for saying. This is another example of a subject we have covered on a previous episode. A link to this episode will also be in the description, so you can see our to and fro about Whitman. Yeah, lots of controversy around what Whitman's were. Were they early direct market books that were repurposed by Western Publishing? Were they actually, we get into it in that video. We don't have to repeat ourselves here, but this is a reminder. This is two questions in a row for me where it's stuff that we've covered in previous videos. I don't mind covering it again, but I would encourage you guys, we've got, believe it or not, 100 plus episodes now in our archive.
That's crazy.
Yes, that you can go dig through and binge and even go. You know what our first episode was about? Do you remember?
No, I do not.
The Eternals speculation, because the movie was coming. That's how long we have been waiting for this movie to actually hit. And now it's finally coming. So if you guys have not caught up on the show and you're behind, go watch these old episodes, go listen to them on your way to work or on the treadmill or whatever you're doing. And you'll enjoy most of them. I think the first 20 episodes are a little rough going, I'm going to be honest with you. But after that, we get into a groove.
I agree. We'll go back and watch some of those early episodes and cringe a little bit, but we were learning. We were learning how to do the show and the format. So.
Yeah. I think the biggest change in terms of the video was learning how to sync audio so I could cut between you and me and back to the two shot instead of just having a static two shot the entire 30 minutes. That was a little brutal. I guess it doesn't matter if you're listening to it on a podcast platform, but that bugged me. All right. What's your next piece of viewer mail?
My next piece of viewer mail is from another friend of the show, Mark Lenniker. Hi, Mark. His comment is, surprise Prez, the first team president, didn't make the list, though I suppose there are plenty of opportunities for more oddball episodes. I actually really enjoyed this series. There's two different ones. There's one from the 70s, which I have not read, but there was another series that was from the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
That I read, and it's excellent. I really enjoyed, maybe excellent is a strong word, but it was a really fun story. It's about a teenage girl who, in an era where presidents are chosen by social media, she goes viral with a video at the right time and ends up being president of the United States. And the story is about her and some of the decisions she makes as president, which are just interesting. It's a great story, and some of it's really pertinent to the way I feel our politics are done nowadays. So yeah, it's definitely an oddball title. It's not a superhero title. It's if I remember correctly, the Prez series from the mid-2000s was only 6 issues long, but it's definitely something that's fun to read. It's where comic books are fun to read. They don't have to have a meaning or a purpose or some overarching plot line. It's just a fun read.
The series from the mid-2000s is has a 2-issue run longer than the original series and with issue 4. It was a brainchild of Joe Simon of Simon and Kirby when he came back to DC in the 70s, and they basically gave him carte blanche to relaunch titles and launch titles and try to make something stick. And for some reason, he just really was working with this artist, Jerry Grandinetti. I cannot stand Jerry Grandinetti's art. It makes me, God rest his soul. I mean, it makes me physically ill to look at. I know. Do you guys have artists that are like that where you just don't, you can't even look at their stuff? Joe Kubert, come at me. I know people worship Joe Kubert. I never got it. Scratchy, scratchy, scratchy. Jerry Grandinetti, I feel bad saying this because I can obviously see the talent and the draftsmanship, mm-hmm. there's just, you know, it's subjective. There's just some people's art. I know people feel that way about Jack Kirby. Some people just can't stand Jack Kirby.
Frank, the inker. I mean, sometimes the inker really has an effect on the pencils.
But Jerry Grandinetti inked his own stuff, and so did Joe Kubert. So there's no excuse. You know, I know I love Frank Robbins. People hated Frank Robbins in the 70s, you know, rubber legs and arms. So I get it. But yeah, sometimes you can't get past the prez because of that. My next comment is from A100. The first Dark Shadows hardcover from Hermes, it depends on if you really like the fashion brand or not. It's Hermes. Collecting the Western Gold Key comics has gone back to press. Oh, wow. So anyone interested in those won't be put off by overpriced copies of the first printing. Yeah, that hardback was low print run and then shot up real quick as all the Dark Shadows nerds grabbed it. OMAC number one and Sandman number one used to be about the easiest to find of the 70s Kirby DC first issues. Absolutely. The last copies I bought were at cover price. I think I paid $3 for my OMAC number one. It's a 9.8 contender. I think same thing with my Sandman number one, which has two, you can call them variants. They're not really variants. There's a dark purple background and a light purple background. The ink just ran out, you know, in the middle of the print run, but people call them variants. I think I got mine, both copies, for like $3 each.
Oh, wow.
Never had that kind of luck with the Demon. Me neither. I paid out the nose for my Demon number one. Mm-hmm. Black Magic, I got a Black Magic from like a dollar bin. And Commandy, I actually paid $7 for my Commandy.
I paid a little bit more. I have a couple copies of it now. Yeah.
Simon's Prez and Brother Power are good to have as well. I used to have the mintiest, crispiest copy of Brother Power the Geek number one. And never slabbed it, sold it when the big purge from, you know, 20 years ago. Yeah, Prez making two appearances.
Yeah.
A groundswell of support for Prez.
Love, it's like I said, the 2000 series was fun.
Yeah. All right. You've got a really passive aggressive piece of viewer mail.
Yeah, this is from Nick Flores. Question for Richard. You wake up when your Dejevic variants of UF4 have poofed out of existence. I've got right here on the wall behind me. I actually have it. Do you part with some of your collection to get it back, or do you keep your other copies and be satisfied with those?
All right. Before you answer this question, I need to clarify something. When I said this was a passive aggressive comment, I was thinking he was talking about Vivi.
Oh no! Now that
you're reading it out loud, I'm like, oh, that was my misinterpretation. So I apologize, Nick. This is not passive aggressive. I thought you were like, what's going to happen when your Ultimate Fallout 4 disappears in the ether?
I've got the VV version of it as well because I have to. I asked that question of myself. Funny you should ask this. The question came up to me mentally. Just recently, what books are sacrosanct in my collection? And in other words, they will stay forever because for a variety of reasons, because of importance, because I would not be able to afford to replace them, things like that. So if for some reason it disappeared, it is one of my core books. I count it and Fantastic Four number 5. And things like Marvel Family Comics number 1. They're all stupid expensive books. They may not have started off stupid expensive. Like I paid $850, I think, for the Dejevic 9.6 that's on the wall behind me right now. And it's, you know, it's almost a $10,000 book at this point. It's signed by Mark Bendis, which is why it's a yellow label.
Brian Bendis?
Brian Bendis. If it disappeared, if it was gone, would I replace it? No. I have enough other books in my collection for miles that there would be a hole. I won't say that I won't miss it, but I would not sell off parts of my collection to replace it. It's one of those books that if I get rid of, I will never get another copy. Just like Fantastic Four number 5. Yeah. If I sell that or something happens to it, that's it. I mean, the odds of me being able to or be willing to sell enough of my collection to replace it are pretty slim.
I'm going to say something really controversial. I don't think I have any books that are completely, I will never, ever get rid of this book. Uh-huh. I think I crossed that bridge when I sold my entire collection 15 odd years ago. And now I have a really different view of my collection. There are books that, you know, I don't want to sell, but boy, if I have to, I will.
Yeah, no, you misunderstand me. When I say sacrosanct, I mean, they are books that I will hold on to unless I have no other option to, or unless the opportunity come. You know, if somebody says, I will buy your Ultimate Fault collection, and I'll trade you for this, you know, Amazing Fantasy 15. Mm-hmm. Okay. If, you know, that's a possibility. Or if I have an opportunity to, or I need the money to do something, you know, pay for college or what have you. Yeah. These would be the last books that I would sell, but they would still be sold eventually if the need arises. It's just, yeah, I would not be able to replace them.
That comment wasn't really directed at you, just because I know there are people that are like, I'll never sell favorite books no matter what. And I think, you know, when life hits you and you have to do it, you guys are going to really come after me this week. I know you are. You know, it's kind of freeing, you know, because you don't have this oppressive hoarding collector nature over you anymore. And you don't have that emotional connection that I can't. What do you mean? I know someone who will remain nameless that, God, he's really gonna hate me saying this. I hope he's not listening. He's got a huge collection with like thousands and thousands of dollars of books, just thousands, and he refuses to sell any of them, even though like he has a whole run of New Mutants. He doesn't like the New Mutants. He doesn't care about the New Mutants. And I'm like, you should get your 98 slabbed and sell it, make some money. But then I won't have the complete run. Why would I do that? He has trouble making his rent.
Wow.
You know, but if you don't have a roof over your head, you're not going to be able to protect those precious comic books from the rain.
Right. You know, like we both have the advantage that none of our books are heirlooms. In other words, you know, your father didn't collect these books and pass them down to you. And therefore, there's some sentimental reason for ownership of that book other than it's a part of your collection or it has value. I think all of our books, while we appreciate them, we could find a path to separating from them. And, that may not be for people who do have those kinds of heirloom books. That may be more difficult. If Dad passed me down an AF-15, it'd be really hard to sell.
That's different. This guy he bought them all himself, and he just, you know, it's the overriding thing.
Yeah.
You know? And it shouldn't be. And I love you. I know you're watching. You're really, my phone's going to blow up as soon as this goes live. We'll talk about it. But in lighter news, it is time for the Comic NFT Watch. Fire up your modem. Beep, bop, bop, boop, boop. All right. This week was, for me, incredibly lame and incredibly exciting. Incredibly lame. Tuesday, Ultimates number one. Boy, who saw this one coming?
Yeah.
The book that was actually inside Ultimate Fantastic Four from the other week finally hits the market. Nothing like giving away a spoiler, VV. Good job there. I don't think anybody gave a crap. This book, the common has been languishing at around $8. I don't think I've seen it go for much higher than that. The more exciting thing for me as a Jack Kirby fan was Thursday's drop, which was Eternals number one. Kind of the same reaction from everyone. No one seemed to give a crap. Early Thursday morning, the secret rare of Eternals number one was selling for 58 gems. Later that evening, it's up to 758 gems. So I don't know what happens. Something went kablooey with Eternals secret rare. Let's see what happens after people see the movie tonight.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think people are, I think it's getting a boost because the movie hasn't been out yet. And I think as soon as people see it and form an opinion, we will see adjustment on that price.
Yeah, the reviews, you know, a lot of people are saying negative things. what's interesting to me is the real reviews from Onion AV Club, you know, legitimate sites of people who've actually seen the movie. The worst thing that they're saying is there's too many characters.
Right.
You know, okay, if that's the worst thing, it's not going to be a bomb, you guys.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about this movie just tonight. I was comparing it to another ensemble movie, which is Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. Guardians, you know, the nice thing that Marvel managed to do with Guardians is give a personality to each character. I could say a one sentence description and you would be able to pick out one of the six members of the Guardians.
Yeah. Right?
That gets to be a bigger challenge when there's 10 people and you're now trying to give that one sentence description and you're trying to figure out which one of those 10 fits that particular description. I think just the volume of characters makes it difficult to form that kind of personal connection.
Yeah, that was, you know, he's my favorite, but he's not above criticism. That was the problem with Jack Kirby, is that he was just so bursting with ideas that, especially New Gods and Eternals, he didn't give you time to get to know the first 12 people he introduced before he introduced another 12 or 24. So the first 10 issues of Eternals, you get Icarus, you get Thena, you get Crow, you get Makari, you get the Deviants, you get, you get Gilgamesh. And by issue 10, you're like, chill, my friend. Chill. It does kind of, you know, the last 9 issues of the run, the 19-issue run, kind of settles into a focus on Icarus, Makari, and Circe with a little bit of Zurus in there as well. And it gets a lot more readable. But the movie, it looks like it's, here's everybody.
Yeah, that's going to be a challenge. You know, you hope it has enough legs to carry it to a sequel, because I think that's the only way you capitalize on that big group is to have a longer form, and that sequel will allow that to mature those characters.
I hope so. I have hopes for it, and I kind of hope people put the secret rare for Eternals number one back down to 58 gems, because I'll get one. I'm not paying $7.58 for it, so, folks.
I passed on both this week, just to let you know.
It's too much, right? It's too much.
Yeah.
I mean, Vivi, I love you, but you got to give us some good stuff, man. I saw Ultimates number one, and I was like, with the rest of the comic book people, like shrugging our shoulders, like, this is a dollar bin book, dude. What are you doing?
It's pacing. They have to keep the right pace to keep the right momentum so that there's interest every week and draw people are coming in because we talked earlier, you know, there's only so many people. There's 40,000 downloads of the iOS version of this app, and the app is the only way to buy. So, they need new, fresh blood coming in, and they need to generate that excitement every single week, so those new people have something to latch onto. And I don't think Ultimates number one was that excitement.
Do you remember the days when Journey into Mystery 85, the first Loki, was like, why are they doing this? Now I would kill for something like that. That's actually a semi key.
Right.
As opposed to this stuff. So we're still watching. No Instagram market watch this week with Elite _ Comics 11, because there's AtCon happening right now. It is a virtual Comic Con on Instagram, November 4th, which was yesterday, through the 7th, all weekend long. Live sales, special guests, giveaways. We're going to be on, I am at least, I don't know if Richard, I haven't talked to you yet about this surprise. We've been invited to be on Saturday at noon your time, 9 a.m. my time on a Saturday. For a little trivia thing, we'll be doing that. So make sure you are following Elite _ Comics 11 on Instagram.
Yep. It's a lot of fun.
Yes. And if you were wondering, looking for your books on Instagram, to our first viewer mail submission, here's a good chance to see a whole bunch of people selling stuff. So tune in. And that is going to wrap up this bonus episode for this week. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, John.
And we will see you guys on Monday.
Everybody stay safe.